Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast. Today we have a special guest, PJ Budler. He is the International Business Manager for Transova, and we kind of cover a lot in this episode. Wouldn't you say, Emily? There's a lot covered by PJ, and that's not necessarily unusual for PJ to talk quite a bit.
No, it's not. He's fun to listen to because he's got a lot of unique experiences compared to, I've never been out of the United States. So I like listening to him talk about the other countries that he's been to. And he brings a unique perspective to our industry and how to break into other industries in other countries. If that's something that you're interested in, I think this will be a great podcast for you to listen to.
Definitely. He's definitely ingrained in the international, from an international audience perspective. So like you said, he brings unique perspectives, good stories. And he's always just fun to listen to.
Yep, definitely. So I think this is probably one that people are going to have to listen to maybe a couple times just to catch all of the good tidbits of information that PJ goes over. But we will post his contact info. And if anybody wants to ask more questions, they're more than welcome to reach out and get those answered. And I'm sure this won't be the last time that we have PJ on with us.
Right. There's so many topics we could go into in detail with him. You could probably do multiple episodes with him and never be bored. So that's maybe right. We'll have to keep that in the mind for the future.
That's right. So we don't want to put off PJ any longer here. So without further ado, here's PJ Budler. Well, thank you, PJ, for joining the Powered by Transova podcast. I'm glad that you survived the weather enough to make it on with us this morning.
Yeah, like I was saying before we started, it was a challenging week. And I think it's a week that didn't just affect us temporarily, but I think a lot of us are going to start thinking a little deeper about the way in which the leadership structures in our states treat energy and agriculture. I think they take for granted that we are a subsection of the population that tend to be independent and we can take care of ourselves and all that. And by them taking that for granted, they can put us in some dangerous situations. Like, I think this week hopefully alerted everyone to what those situations could be like.
PJ, why don't you tell everybody a little bit what you have going on so that everybody understands what's going on this week and we can reflect back when we put this up on the podcast?
So Texas is experiencing the coldest week it's had in 55 years, and we've had a lot of snow statewide. Every single county in Texas is under a severe weather warning, which has never happened before. And these temperatures are relative, right? So they're extremely cold for us. For people up in Iowa or Indiana or Ohio or further north, as you get into Canada, it would just be winter. But we're not geared for that. Our roads aren't geared for that. We don't have equipment. Our pipes aren't laid correctly for it. Our electricity grid, what we're finding out this week, has been maintained in a little bit of a suspicious way. They've entertained a lot more what they call renewable energies, as in solar and wind, at the detriment of coal burning plants. And because of that, when we hit the situation, which obviously no one anticipated, but for once in 55 years, the entire power grid couldn't take it. And I think there's going to be an uprising in terms of people paying attention to why on earth is our energy being run by a board of directors. Most of them don't live in Texas. Some of them don't even live in the US. And they're investing in wind and solar, which wasn't very helpful this week. The windmills froze, the solar panels snowed up. And I mean, just to put it crudely, not having power in Texas is like going hungry in a grocery store. We should never be out of power. We're the power capital of the world. So it and why this fits into the narrative of this podcast is because energy is agriculture's greatest ally. You know, energy is the food of food. Without energy, we can't make food. You know, especially if you're in a more mechanized agricultural industry, like say corn production, for example, you know that without fossil fuels, there is no corn. And without corn, there's no food for, you know, millions and millions of people. So that's why I think my spin on this is a little more serious than we got cold and we didn't have water for a week. I think the realization of how closely energy and food is married together, hopefully now more people will be alerted to how important it is to ensure that we don't gamble with an opportunity for a few elite people to get wealthy off what they call renewables, which are actually should be called unreliables, and then gamble them becoming wealthy and successful at the risk of us all going cold and hungry.
Yeah, I think this week is going to spur a lot of conversation. I mean, obviously, this is already a pretty hot topic of renewable energy and, you know, how we move forward with climate change and everything else. And I think this is just going to kind of fuel that conversation going forward. So let's hop into Transova conversation here, PJ. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself and your role at Transova?
So I was, as you can tell, this is not a Texas accent. I was born and raised in South Africa on a fifth generation cattle, sheep, goat and horse operation, and started a registered cattle herd when I was 15, and then grew that until 2012, where we ended up running 1,500 registered cows on five different properties in three different Southern African countries. And I loved it. The seed stock industry was incredible, and I'm still passionate about it. The reason for the move to the US was a positive move. I wasn't running away from anything. I was moving towards something which I believe could fit my life ambition a little better. And I had a desire to see how far you could take an international livestock or cattle initiative where you would include all breeds in all countries and bridge some gaps between industries that are really successful and flourishing on their own, but just needed a connection so that people could meet. So you create that awareness, people get to know about each other, create some goodwill, let them meet each other, and then hopefully let that move into trade, which it does. People trade with people that they get on with and know and have met before. And so that I've been in the US for 8 years now. I actually passed my citizenship test last week. So I'm going to become one of all y'all pretty soon. You know?
That's awesome. Congrats.
It is awesome.
You've even adopted the y'all, it sounds like.
Well, I couldn't use it officially until Tuesday when I passed the test. Now I will use it liberally. And then while in Texas in the last 8 years and slowly developing this idea, because there wasn't really a career for it. And I did extensive travel and a lot of involvement in different cattle events and judging shows and speaking at events and meeting people from all over the world. What I realized is that there really is something to this. And I was loving it, until Transova posted that they needed an international business manager. And I wasn't aware of this posting at all, but a few contacts within Transova contacted me and mentioned what it was. And I realized that this is just going to be everything that I wanted to do, but in a formalized setting, which made it even better. So I've been with Transova for, it's next month will be 3 years. And it's been incredible. The opportunities that the company or the organization presents to us on a weekly basis, but also having the backing of a team of several hundred team members to fill in the gaps where you aren't so strong at certain skills or traits, which that's been incredibly helpful. We've got such a talented team of people at Transova that we could run literally any agricultural venture for a non-government organization or a big private equity group without even looking outside of our team of talent at Transova. And I think I don't think too many people realize this just on a day-to-day basis, but it's an incredible grouping of human capital. So that's me up until this point. Live in Aledo, Texas, just west of Fort Worth, and I work from here, but find myself on the road perpetually. I think I've got more gypsy blood in me than South African or Texas blood. I tend to keep needing to be moving. But it's been incredibly exciting. And then also having a product and a service and a technology to take to these nations put a whole lot of arrows in my quiver that weren't there before. So yeah, that's my story to this point.
PJ, you've talked about how you travel quite a bit and you're bringing services and products to different people, places, countries. What does a successful day look like to you? Or what, you know, when you wake up in the morning, what is your goal for the day? And, you know, maybe does that change every day or is it kind of consistent?
No, I think in my situation, every day is extremely different. So I try and most of my day outside of what I actually do when I get to my desk or into my truck or to the place that I'm going to work at or speak at or judge at or represent our products at, I try and get that as structured as possible because the rest of the time there is very little structure to it. A successful day, it was only a few years ago that I had to draw a line between success and significance because there's a difference. You know, you can sell beer in Dallas and be the biggest beer salesperson in Dallas and you'll be incredibly successful and wealthy, but that's not very significant. You know, what are you actually doing? I mean, what have you got to show for it? And that's where I've moved from thinking about it in terms of success to more significance, where if through the line of product and services and technologies we have, if that enables people and their animals and their livestock to be more productive, their farms, ranches, or companies to become more profitable, and then the areas around them, whether it's a village or a town or a neighborhood, becomes more prosperous, I think there's a lot of significance in that. And then success becomes a spin-off of that. You know, if you do that right, you'll reach a lot more success. There are a lot of companies, even within livestock agriculture in the US, that are very successful, but they're not significant. You know, if they go away, you're not going to miss them. They haven't moved the needle at all. And I feel like that's what I do love about our companies, is it's doing significant things. You know, we're doing a lot of things at Transova that no one had done before or no one has done at the scale at which we're doing it or no one has done it as well as we do it. And I think that's significant. So for me, it's the way I deem success is not how many dollars I've bring to the company today, but more as to how wide open I can blow the opportunities that we or plow a new field that we can go plant these ideas and technology and genetics and services into.
So PJ, I think this is all great stuff. You're very fun to listen to because you got a great take on things. So with your job, it takes a lot of traveling. How many countries have you actually been to?
I think I'm on 93 at the moment.
Which, oh my gosh.
It is a lot, but must remember a lot of those countries are smaller than a New England state, you know. So if you're on an extensive Eastern European trip, you're gonna rack up a lot of countries in short time.
Do you have a favorite and a least favorite place you visited?
Yeah, I think from the point of view of where I'd like to, where I could potentially live, I mean, then I certainly would have a favorite and a least favorite. But in terms of visiting, I like seeing all the good and the bad and the ugly, and because you learn, you know. For example, a trip to Cuba a few years ago, I did a couple of them. It would be right up there with one of the places I'd least like to live, but you learn a lot. You know, you learn a lot about us as people, and also you learn a lot about genetics, because you see what type of genetics it takes to thrive or flourish in an environment where management is less than optimum, you know, or where the climate and management makes it more difficult for those genetics to flourish and thrive. So in terms of places to live, I think being a gypsy, I could live anywhere, but there've been some incredible places. Like, I mean, Argentina is just absolutely beautiful, and you know, the food and the culture and everything is amazing. The Scandinavian countries have always been really impressive for me. New Zealand is just stunning. I mean, Canada, amazing. Mexico, in terms of hospitality and opportunity, has been great. And yeah, my settling in the US wasn't by accident. I mean, it was by very thoughtful, planned out design. So I think we're in a good place. You know, I'm very grateful that we live where we do. Despite what overpaid talking heads might say, it's still the best deal going.
Now, if only Emily and I can jump into your suitcase and travel with you, because I've been to not that many countries. So it would be interesting to see all of the world like you have.
Well, if you want a list of what to do and not to do, I've got a pretty long one of those.
Yeah, you're the first person I'm going to call when I plan my overseas trip once COVID breaks.
Yeah. And I'll happily, the nice thing about the cattle industry is you don't just visit these places, you create good relationships and friends there. So, and they're delighted to host you, because a lot of those countries don't often get visitors that have similar interests to them. So yeah, within the Transova family, that's what I do enjoy doing, is putting people in touch where they might be, whether it's to be hosted or just to hang out or to tour with them. And we've got an amazing network out there now.
Okay, from a client perspective, let's kind of switch gears. How can producers within the United States, or I guess maybe anywhere, how can they break into an international market? How would they go about starting, you know, to expand what they do currently?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sarah, because I think it's one that we've all gotten wrong over the years, but we're getting better at it. And the old premise was you produce something that works in the US, and it might be successful in the US, and because it was successful in the US, you assume that it's going to work anywhere. Why wouldn't it? You know, and then those through the vehicle of bull studs or semen companies, genetics companies, they would then latch onto that product with the same premise and send it around the world to literally every country, and find that they do work in some countries, but for the most part, every industry has such unique objectives and resources and environments that it's impossible to create an export value chain that way. You've got to do it the other way around, where you first learn about the market and the industry that, and country you want to potentially work with, what their needs are, what the little idiosyncrasies are in each breed, which breeds are prominent there, what types of cattle within those breeds. So if you're dealing with Herefords, for example, do they like horned cattle or polled cattle? Do they like yellow ones or red ones? Do they want eye pigment? Should the cattle have a feather neck? Should they have white legs or red legs? And all these little things seem superficial, but they're all deal breakers. You know, they're all tripwires in terms of being a barrier to entry. And all it takes is going there and seeing it and visiting a few programs and meeting the people. And then you quickly learn what can work there and what can be sent there. The beautiful thing about the U.S. is the U.S. does have cattle to meet all those different needs and requirements because of the vast numbers of livestock in the U.S., because of the way in which we have sanitary requirements that we can meet, and we have protocols with most countries, albeit some of them you've got to jump through a few hoops. And then also we've got all the different climatic conditions and environments. You know, if you think about, if you're down in the Florida Keys this week, or you in Bismarck, North Dakota, you cover everything between those two environments. So we do have the product. I think what we've been doing up until recently is just without doing any research or understanding the needs of our potential clients, we just send them a product with a lot of marketing, a lot of propaganda, and using the terminology that seems to work to a degree in the US, like, you know, this is the number one dollar bee bull in history, the most unique Angus in captivity. That doesn't translate very well when you cross borders. Like the US is extremely good at selling things because there's an ability to add premium, and there's a way to really make a cow that's worth 2,000 or 1,000 at the sale barn sell for 250,000 through adding premium with pedigree and pictures and videos and stories and a little bit of hype and a good auctioneer and a great sale manager. That isn't really the case in most or almost all other countries. They just need something that's going to be productive and functional and fertile and live a long time. So the caution bit needs to be added to our product, and also just doing some education and research on where to send it. That's the bad news is there's some homework to do for most producers. The good news is that we're here to be intermediaries. You know, Transova wants to help with the service, and we've got, I think, experience within our team that can help matchmake those genetics to the right clients. And then thirdly, like I said, all those different types of cattle, there are very few cattle requirements there are in the world that we can't meet within the US. There are some, but they're very few. But it's just about, you know, making sure that the demand is met by the right supply, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And so you talked a lot about doing your homework and, you know, finding what a country needs based on, you know, their situation. I guess from your perspective, PJ, where do you see the biggest potential for producers in the United States to go to, like, which country has the biggest potential for exports for us? And maybe that's different by breed or beef versus dairy, or even Brahmin cattle versus, you know, not. So
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there, literally every country in the world eats beef or drinks milk or does all three. You know, so there isn't a country in the world that's completely vegetarian, you know, or vegan. You know, every country in the world is a consumer of the products that we propagate. Okay. But where the even within breeds, but also within the industry, where the regions around the world are that are ripe for us to supply these products and services and technologies to, they move depending on how those different regions develop within themselves and reach maturity, and then they don't need us in the same way as they did before. So if I take it from a low level grassroots level, where the developing markets for me are our biggest potential in terms of supplying a commodity in large numbers at a reasonable price. So those are some of the South American countries, Bolivia, Ecuador, Peru, East Africa, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and then Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, and then getting into Eastern Europe for me is very attractive because they are, they're just getting over the hangover of being part of those communist regimes. Only 31 years now past that, but there's still a lot of molds to break. The land is incredibly fertile. The people are book smart, educated, so they've been through, you know, formal schooling. They're tied to the European Union, which brings law and order, which a lot of the other regions I've just mentioned don't quite have that same law and order. And the logistics of getting product from Eastern Europe to Western Europe is as simple as getting product from California to Kentucky. I mean, it's open, you know. So those are the markets that I think we need to, we can send them product where they're not going to be too specific about color and horns and genetically enhanced EPDs and stuff like that. They want commodity. They want hooves on the ground. Okay. Then as we get above that, we go into the markets that have matured out of that, that have got their livestock, but are still relying heavily on the US to be the propagator of genetics, and then they'll be the multiplier of those genetics into more livestock. So countries like Colombia, in some ways, Mexico, more with their Bos Taurus breeds. Bos Indicus, they've pretty much figured it out, but with their Bos Taurus breeds. And then there are a lot of the Central American countries as well that are at that level where they're still growing their cattle populations, but they're still relying on the US to be the seed stock source for them. Then you go to one step higher, which would be like Western Europe, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, where they've got their own seed stock source. They don't particularly believe that the US has got better genetics than they have, but there will be some different bloodlines that they might want to try just to open up their gene pools or improve certain traits. And those markets are good in that they'll pay whatever it takes to get those genetics. So they'll pay dollar for dollar what the US pays or even more in order to get them. But when marketing to them, you pretty much have to listen and keep quiet because they know what they want. You know, you're not going to pull a bull out in Denver or Oklahoma or Fort Worth or Houston and say, and then, you know, get your big sales pitch going to them, because you'll lose them. The second you tell them that, you know, look how thick this bull is, as though they couldn't see it themselves, or, you know, look how good the udder is on this Holstein cow, as though, yeah, that you've with those markets, they know what they want. They'll come and find you when they see that you've got something to fit them. And those relationships for me is more like a keeping in contact friendship, make sure that, you know, we meet up wherever we are. But I could never pick up the phone and so, you know, we've got a lineup of bulls that we've got semen on, or like we've got an inventory of 300 embryos. Are you interested? Yeah, it would be like, I don't know, you know, taking steaks to Ruth's Chris or Del Frisco's and say, you know, I don't know if you guys are interested, but, you know, I sell steaks. They've got it figured out already, you know. But it's a good market. And where I think we fit in well with those guys, especially Europe and Australia, is from the technology standpoint. You know, what we do have, especially with IVF, we significantly further along the line than any of them are. And it might be that a lot of the work we're doing with technology will be dealing more with their genetics, but our technology, if that makes sense.
It does. And it kind of brings me to my next question that came up while you were talking. You talked about they ultimately know what they want. And it's more about that connection. PJ, when you're providing that connection, do you find yourself talking more about embryo transfer, IVF, is it semen, or is it an actual, you know, embryo product that they're looking for? You know, we've started offering those through Progentis. Is that the conversation you're having, or is it kind of all over the board?
I think when you listen to them and let them literally spew out everything that's on their mind or on their heart, you figure out which part of Transurban Progentis you're going to introduce them to. So two examples, some of the Middle East deals we're doing at the moment, it's just commodity, you know, so they don't know what to ask for. So they know it needs to be Holstein, or they know it needs to be Jersey. So we have to make sure that our products are, you know, approved according to our standards, and our geneticists have looked at them and said, okay, this is going to work. And we send them there, but we've got to hold their hand every step of the way. I mean, we're going to have to explain, you know, what a TPI is, or, you know, what net merit is, et cetera. Then the other client, like the Australians, who are doing a big beef master, draft master crossover deal with them. They just want us to source donors exactly according to their needs, send them the options without trying to sell any specific one to them. And then they send us back a list of that'll work, that'll work, that'll work. We do the same with bulls. They're relying on our technology to make those embryos, because they trust in the quality of our embryos. And then they're relying on us to do the logistics part, get, you know, all the documentation and certificates and shipping done for them. So that's a very different conversation. And what I found is it's hard. The way in which the American cattle psyche works is often we can't help but sell. You know, it's very hard for us to have that conversation without putting a price tag onto it and trying to make sure that the people leave with something from a conversation. With those higher, more advanced, developed livestock industries, I think that could be potentially harmful or hurtful, because they don't want to be sold to. They want to come to us with a proposal of what they want us to supply to them, and then we've got to meet their criteria. So it's not the other way around. And I've seen this firsthand in Denver and Houston. It's different type of international clients that will walk down the lines, and the producers will try and market their products to them as though they've never seen a bull before, which is, you know, you want to tear your hair out when you see it, because it's a tripwire that's very avoidable if you're just prepared to just listen to them first as to as to what their needs are, if that makes sense.
PJ, before you joined the Transova team, I would have considered you very established already in an international audience. You've done a lot of judging all over the world. So you've already kind of had that connection. What I want to know is what did you gain when you joined kind of Team Transova, or, you know, what's your favorite part about joining this company?
I think the first thing was the support structure and the team. You know, before I joined Transova, I was a one-trick pony. You know, I could go into a herd of cows or into a show ring situation or speak at an event, and it was genetics and breeds and really beef cattle, you know, and that was my comfort zone. Transova stretched me a lot. I mean, from a technological standpoint, and then in the dairy side, which is a large part of what we do. If I might be mistaken, but company-wide, I'm assuming it's about 50-50, isn't it? Beef and dairy. So that's a massive part of my day. So that was learning on the run, and it's been an education. I mean, one of the most grateful things I am is when I look back 3 years, what I didn't know back then was frightening. I mean, now I'm starting to know what I don't know, you know, whereas back then I didn't know what I didn't know, you know. And so that was a massive thing. And I think also it gives one the opportunity to do just what you're good at and passionate about. And the other people in the team that can do the admin side and the accounting side and the logistics side, which I'm a disaster at, but they love it. You know, accountants love numbers. I don't love numbers. You know, I'm awful with numbers. So it's a beautiful match for me, because I don't feel like I've given anything up or sacrificed anything, but I've gained a lot, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think PJ, you're a good asset to our team, that it just kind of rounds out the whole Transova picture having you on board. So we're very thankful that you joined our team.
PJ, there's a lot that you could sit and talk about, and I feel like we could go on for another hour, 2 hours, just listening to stories that you have. Is there anything else you would want to talk about that Emily and I haven't asked you today?
Yeah, I think if I can close on something, you know, 2020 was weird and tough and frustrating, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, there was a lot of anger built up about just the way everything happened with the way in which world leaders responded to the virus. Like, I also don't let people tell me that the coronavirus did anything, because it didn't. The way it was dealt with is what caused all the issues, you know. And but what we have is, I think we've really learned to refine what's necessary and what's not. We've really cut a lot of fat off the industry, or off the way in which we do things, because we've been forced to. And when normalization, markets will ensure normalization comes, you know, at some point, and hopefully quickly takes place. I think we're going to be fitter and leaner and more ready to do a better job than we were leading into the pandemic. Because before that, things were getting nice and easy, you know, for the industry as a whole. And when it gets back to that similar position, I think we're going to be a lot more ready and fighting fit for normalization. I know personally for myself, just the way we organize our days and the way in which we get our priorities straight in terms of what to tackle first or next. I think that is one positive we can take out of this, and the fact that we've learned to anticipate. It's not an automatic earth at the moment. You know, we have to wait, and that's a positive in itself. And then when it arrives, I think there'll be a lot more appreciation for the little things that we were missing, you know, where we just took for granted that you can just, you know, attend an ag event and there's hundreds of thousands of people there and there's shows to watch and auctions to go to and dinners to be had, and then it's all gone. You know, I think we're going to appreciate it a lot when it all comes back, and I hope we don't forget too quickly what we were missing when we were missing it.
That's a really good point. I mean, the pandemic brought about appreciation for things that we did have or did not have. But I think it also, like you said, there was positives that came from it because it exposed areas for growth or things that we potentially need to fix moving forward. So it wasn't all bad. It was definitely a learning experience for a lot of the people and the industries within the United States and I guess the entire world.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that was just unique about this is our international clients were going through the same thing as we were. So no one was isolated in this issue. Like, you know, the smallest South Pacific islands, you know, Tuvalu and the Solomon Islands were going through the same issue as the United States. So yeah, it was it was just a unique, there really hasn't been a time in history like that where we literally are all in the same boat.
Yeah. Well, and two, I think we've been forced to do things differently, and it's led to good things. I mean, how many people, all three of us work from home now or had, and I just started working from home a year ago, and there's others in that same situation that are just as productive as if you were in the office, or, you know, our supply chain, you know, making adjustments to that, you know, different things, I mean, have changed, I think, for the better because of the pandemic. So like you said, appreciating the small things and how we've kind of used that to improve and grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that is it for today. So thank you, PJ, again for joining us. It's been really fun getting to hear you share your insights on international markets. If anybody has questions for you, they can shoot you an email or give you a call. We'll be sure to put your contact info in the description of this podcast episode. So thank you again, PJ, and hope that you enjoy the rest of your day and that you get your water and electricity back soon.
Yeah. And Emily, on that note of people contacting me, what I'm also quite happy to do is when travel resumes and international trips happen, if we've got team members or clients that work with us that want to explore these international markets and travel with me, I'm more than happy to have them along to show them the ropes, introduce them to the right people, because then it's win-win. You know, they're gonna find projects to work on where we can assist them in creating the product and then moving it for them. So if anyone's anyone would rather not travel alone and would like to have someone who would like to have a fearless gypsy leader take them, I'm quite happy to have people come along, you know, that could be mutually beneficial.
Careful what you wish for, PJ. There's going to be a slew of people raising their hands, including us.
Yeah, well, I do know, if it, depending on who it is, I can organize the seats on the plane where we don't sit too close to each other, so we get a respite from each other.
Before we close out, I just thought of one more thing. We talked about this when we were in San Antonio last year. How many languages do you speak?
So I speak four languages, and three of them are redundant in the US. Actually, one of them, Afrikaans, which is Dutch. It's a Dutch-German hybrid, very similar to Pennsylvania Dutch. So there I do have a little bit of an edge. I could have a very good conversation with a Pennsylvania Dutch and, you know, in Pennsylvania, Ohio, et cetera, Kentucky. But the other two are certainly not exportable. They, Xhosa and Zulu, they're not going to work, especially not in Texas.
Do they have a y'all? Is there a version that can you translate that into other languages?
No, y'all's a pretty unique word because it's got a lot of utility to it. It can be singular and plural. And then when you add all in front of y'all, then it's all encompassing.
All right. Well, thanks, PJ. Again, we appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you so much, Emily. And thanks for thinking of having me on. It was an absolute pleasure, privilege, really.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.